Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, we certainly want to wish everyone a very happy and sunny Father's Day as we celebrate Father's Day today. So I thought I'd read a little essay written by the very talented humorist Dave Barry, entitled, in short, A Perfect Day. Dave writes, Father's Day is coming and here, and millions of children and our wives are thinking, this year I think I'll get Dad a nice casual shirt. Fine, go ahead. Although you might want to ask yourself a couple of questions first, such as, does Dad want another nice casual shirt? Have you noticed that Dad currently owns approximately 73 nice casual shirts, and he wears only two of them? And that he wears one of those two only when the other one is really dirty? Do you honestly believe that Dad is thinking, boy, I wish I had another shirt so I could not wear it? Of course not. Dad is thinking, okay, never mind what Dad is thinking. Nobody ever really knows what Dad is thinking, including, much of the time, Dad. But trust me, he doesn't want a shirt. But, you say, when I gave him a shirt last year, he appeared to like it. Well, of course he did. Like all fathers, he has learned to simulate sincere appreciation for gifts that he has absolutely no use for. That's why Dad always responded so positively back when you used to give him, and I hope you no longer do this, although I understand it still happens, even in the 21st century America, a tie. Wow, Dad would go. A piece of cloth to knot tightly around my neck, strikingly similar to the numerous other pieces of neck cloth wadded together in the back of my closet. In my entire life, I have met two men who were genuinely interested in ties. Both of these men were in the tie industry. Dads are so good at feigning appreciation that they even were able, years ago, to pretend they were happy to receive cologne. This was back in the dark days of cologne giving, which mercifully came to an end after the horrible 1986 tragedy in Cincinnati wherein a 72-year-old man's house collapsed under the weight of the estimated 2,000 unopened bottles of Old Spice that he had stored in his attic. Okay, you were saying, then what should I get for Dad? If I ask him what he wants, he always says, nothing. That's because he knows that if he told you what he really wants, you wouldn't give it to him. For example, let's consider the area of clothing. The nicest Father's Day surprise of all for Dad would be if you handed him a box and he unwrapped it, and there, inside, sitting on a bed of folded tissue, was the pair of his undershorts that somebody threw away 6 months ago, without asking Dad, because they had reached the stage where they were 3% undershorts and 97% holes. Dad misses those undershorts. They were his faithful undershorts companion. But of course, now they are in a landfill somewhere along with Dad's Led Zeppelin t-shirt, which Dad brought and wore at a 1972 concert during which he stood on his seat and sang Whole Lotta Love. Yes, Dad did this. Somebody threw the shirt away 2 years ago, again, without asking Dad, because it had a bunch of stains, which happened to have great sentimental value to Dad because, okay, never mind about the stains. The point is that you cannot give Dad these things for Father's Day. But you know what you can give him? You can give him what he always tells you he wants. Nothing. I mean it. For Dad, the perfect Father's Day would be one in which he didn't even realize that it was Father's Day, because nobody was making him appreciate gifts he didn't want or read greeting cards filled with lame Father's Day poetry. When I was just a little tyke, you showed me how to ride a bike. And you were sweet to me the day I drove your car into the bay. Dad, I think you're really grand. I'm praying for your prostate gland. There would be none of this on the perfect Father's Day. There would be just Dad, wearing his oldest surviving undershorts, free of pressure, maybe just sitting in front of the TV watching the NBA playoffs. There would be no conversation, other than Dad periodically observing that these players today could carry the ball across Montana and never get called for traveling. That's how you can give Dad the perfect Father's Day. Of course, that's not all. You'd also make a restaurant reservation. At the end of the day, you'd dress up and go out and have a nice dinner, during which you'd propose a toast to Dad, who would be back home in front of the TV, happily asleep in his veteran underwear. That would be perfect. But I know, you're going to give him a shirt. Dave Barry, in short, a perfect Father's Day, or something like that. Interesting story about Father's Day. In the beginning, they created a day to honor mothers. It gave us a chance to say thank you and to pay back, just a little, all that mom does and had done. A day to celebrate motherhood. And all was good. Mother's Day was a great success. Mother's Day has become an event. Card, candy, and flower sales skyrocket. Department stores run specials and sales boom. Restaurants are packed with families treating their mothers to dinner. Mother's Day is the busiest phone day of the year, and traffic on that day is a nightmare. And, rightfully so, this is how it should be. In 1909, Sonora Smart Dodd, a devoted daughter from Spokane, Washington, campaigned for a Father's Day celebration in 1909 after listening to a church sermon on the merits of Mother's Day. Her mom had passed away, and her dad had served as both father and mother to his six children for 21 years. She is credited with being the driving force behind the holiday because a stateside celebration was proclaimed in 1910. Eventually, annual celebrations were held throughout the U.S. and Canada, but it wasn't until 1972 that the holiday was officially recognized by the U.S. Congress. Wow, 1972. So Dad was given his day as, well, a noble idea, but not very successful. Father's Day celebrations just never took off, particularly in the gift-giving department. JCPenney's corporation took a survey last year asking its customers what gifts they had given on Father's Day. The number two answer was nothing. What Father's Day should really be about are the children who made us fathers. Instead of sitting around basking in the glory of fatherhood, we should participate in the joys of childhood. So, Dad, on this Father's Day, take your kids to their favorite places, do their favorite activities, play their games. Try cooking them their favorite meal. Give them their baths. Read them a story. Put them to bed. This Father's Day, be a dad. Hey, even better, let's make it a Father's Weekend. Under these circumstances, who would object? Spend one day doing your children's activities and the other day sharing your activities with them. After all, chances are you won't be spending much time opening presents. That's very true. Very true. You know, we want to mention, in honor of Father's Day, of course, some quotes, and as we go through our show, we'll kind of touch on a few of those. But there are the Dad Commandments. Fatherhood, you might argue, is too complicated to be reduced to capsule form, but complexity only adds intrigue to the quest for guiding principles. And do we need guiding principles? After all the emotions, all the yelling, and all the laughter, they've distilled all the duties and demands down to 10. So here are 10 commandments for being a dad. And we'll go down through these 10 as we go through the show. Number one, hey dad, be big. In spirit, that is. Consider some of the big guys who have gone before you. Father Time, God the Father. You can't give this role a walkthrough. You've got to play it. The kids expect stature from you. You're the anvil on which they hammer out their deal with the world. Be a presence in their lives and in their minds. So, hey, Dad, be big. The second one is, hey, Dad, be small. Yes, this contradicts the first tip. Don't be so big that you suck all the air out of the room. Give your kids space to move around in, to test their thoughts and strengths. Take a back seat 3 or 4 times a week. Say, maybe. Say, I don't know. Now and then, Tell the kids you're sorry, assuming you behaved badly. You'll feel brand new. Third commandment is, hey, Dad, come home. Lots of fathers have two jobs. That's your situation. God bless you. You'll get no heat from anyone, but if you can pay the bills without working double shifts, get home when you can. Nothing good can happen until you do. Number four, bob and weave, Bubba. Stay light on your feet. Don't make too many hard and fast rules. Don't insist on having your way with the kids just because the rest of the world isn't always overly interested in the sound of your voice. There is a difference between authority and power. Have the first. Don't abuse the second. Very good line. There is a difference between authority and power. Have the first. Don't abuse the second. Number five, never dance in front of their friends. Remember the cautionary legend of the father who once picked up his kids at a junior high dance and actually went into the gym and did a few seconds of the Hully Gully with Margie Costanzo? His adult children still have embarrassment nightmares. So the first five, hey, Dad, be big. Hey, Dad, be small. Hey, Dad, come home. Bob and weave, Bubba, and never dance in front of their friends. So just a few. We'll get to the other five as the show goes on. Well, as we said, I had the opportunity of having Herb Alpert on our show a couple weeks ago, and certainly enjoy his music, so we're going to get back to his CD entitled his Definitive Hits. The great hits. Not very well known, but it's just a beautiful song. From Herb Alpert, Making Love in the Rain. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Believe, I'm all alone, I hear the rain.
Beautiful love song from Herb Alpert, Making Love in the Rain. We're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce the musical Buddy, the Buddy Holly story, which will play Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph, for a limited engagement June 18th through the 30th. In just 3 short years, rock legend Buddy Holly set the music world on fire and forever changed the face and sound of rock and roll. Buddy, the Buddy Holly story, charts his meteoric climb, legendary adventures, and tragic fall on the fateful day the music died. Armed with a Fender Stratocaster guitar, his signature specs, and a charismatic blend of rockabilly swagger, Buddy explodes onto the stage in this jukebox musical fully loaded with classics Peggy Sue, Oh Boy, That'll Be the Day, We're All Right, Not Fade Away, and many more with an encore that will have you on your feet and dancing the aisles. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning star, stage and screen. Kurt has appeared in such classics as Godspell, The Fantastics, and Desire Under the Elms. Proud graduate in film studies from the University of Central Florida, and he performs his original music with Skyway Spirit. One of the brightest young stars in the world of musical theater, now starring the title role of Buddy Holly in the hit musical Buddy, the Buddy Holly story, June 18th through the 30th at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randolph. Mr. Kurt Jenkins. Kurt, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, thanks for having me. That was quite an intro there.
Well, very well deserved, and congratulations on your success with Buddy. What makes Buddy so timeless, Kurt?
It's the fact that a lot of the musical devices that he was using in his songs are still around today. He laid the foundation in many ways for modern rock and roll into pop. I mean, it was just a linear progression from him to, you know, and then Elvis and the Beatles, and he was the first person to blend things in the right way to make it, I don't know, to make it modern in a way that is timeless.
You asked a question, it's a question no one can answer. Would he have been bigger than Elvis had he stick around?
I don't know. I can't answer that. Elvis had this certain visual swagger and aesthetic to him that Buddy necessarily didn't. Buddy necessarily wasn't a sex idol, an icon sort of like Elvis was. So I don't know. In terms of music, I think he might have had a more impact on the actual on pop music itself, because where he was going when he died was just leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else.
When you look at him, especially when you look at him in the musical, Kurt, he seems to be a very friendly, welcoming guy. He doesn't have a lot of ego, it didn't seem like, and he just seems like he blends in with the regular man.
Right. He didn't really stand out in school in terms of, you know, he just kept to himself a lot. But apparently, you know, being from Texas in the South, he had that very charmed, mannerly air about him. But I think the only time he did have any sort of resemblance of an ego was when he was doing his music and trying to make sure that it was true to what he wanted to do, as with any passionate artist, I guess.
As the audience comes to the show, give a little background of what it's about.
Well, you did a fabulous job at introducing the show, but the show takes place over the last 18 months of his life. He didn't really have a very long music career. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to, but it charts the beginning and, you know, his rise to fame throughout the show and the various obstacles and successes he has along the way. That's what the show is about, but it's peppered with musical numbers that fit the narrative of his life, and the ending concert in Clear Lake, Iowa, and the show is just a explosion of all good things.
We get re-familiarized with Buddy Holly because of the great Don McLean song, The Day the Music Died, and people then, I think, generated a new appreciation for Buddy, and it's gone on from there.
Right, right. No, he's one of those artists that not everyone necessarily may grow up hearing his music. I know for me, honestly, I didn't grow up listening to it. The people that I was around weren't playing it. I'd heard the basics, but as soon as I got into his music more and more, it made so much sense, and it was one of those things like, why hadn't I heard this before? But it was instantly familiar and accessible, and it stuck with me from the first moment I heard it.
Have you been a musician all your life?
In a sense, yes. I started playing piano very early, and then I heard Jimi Hendrix when I was about 13, and instantly got a guitar. Between Jimi Hendrix and Marty McFly playing Johnny B. Goode in Back to the Future. That was my, I was like, that's it. That's as good as it gets.
As he slides across the stage, I remember
exactly,
that. That was a great scene. Of course, you have your degree in film studies. What was the segue from that to the stage, musical theater?
Well, I'd been doing musical theater throughout high school, and I studied it a bit, probably my first half of my college career. But I've always had a passion for film, and that's what I wanted to spend my academic studies on, because film is such a, for me, it's such a high art. And at the moment, at that moment, I had more passion for film production, and so that's what I did. And so I sort of put theater on the back burner. But with this show, it's put me right back in the forefront in terms of what I'm doing. I'm, you know, now officially, you know, back in the game of theater. And what a show to be back into it with.
Well, it's true. I mean, look at the enthusiasm that you generate on the stage, the passion you bring to your role, and you can feel that from the audience, that instant gratification, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever you want to look at, you don't get that from film.
Yeah, no, it never gets boring for me to do. Anytime you see it, anytime people come to see it in Chicago or anywhere else, it's just as new as one of the first times I did it, because the energy from the audience never gets old because of the way the show's formatted, in parts of a direct address rock show. You never get tired of that roar of the crowd and that, like you said, that instant gratification of send and return in terms of energy exchange.
You know, you do this day in and day out, evening in and evening out. Is there a certain amount of redundancy that you have to generate a little more enthusiasm some nights than others? Because those people out in the audience, they're seeing that for the first time, so they're expecting your A game all the time.
You know? Oh, yeah. I mean, we're only human. You know,
right, sure.
At times things happen, and, you know, some days something happens off stage, and you try not to bring anything external to the stage. But, you know, we do our very best as humanly possible to give it 100% each time. Because... again, with the nature of the show, it's kind of hard not to have a good time, no matter if you're the actor on stage or in the audience, because no matter what you're going through, when you start getting into the movement of the show, you forget about everything. And, you know, it never gets old to do the show. It truly doesn't.
Are there some songs, Kurt, that are harder than others that you play on the stage?
In a sense, hard is, the word hard is relative, because a lot of Buddy's stuff isn't complicated per se, but my guitar playing style has had to adapt and simplify to play his songs correctly. The hardest thing that I probably had to do was that there's a number, Johnny B. Goode, and I play a guitar solo behind my head.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably been the hardest thing to do, just from a technical standpoint.
I can imagine.
Yeah, but I mean, it's fun. I mean, I've got it down now. But it's fun to do that, and also I leave that solo open ended. It's not pre-written. I improvise it every night, so I never know what's going to happen.
Bring something new to it. That's kind of interesting. Now, you rehearse frequently, but do you practice every day?
Yes, I do. I was actually playing the guitar when you called.
Mm-hmm.
Yes and no. Some days I don't pick up a guitar until I get to the theater. Some days I play all day. It really just depends on how I'm feeling. You know, we play enough guitar every show to where you're always
sure.
Fresh. But in terms of active practice, it sort of varies from day to day. It depends on what I have going on. But ideally, I would like to practice, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. But a lot of times, it's just not the case.
Given your preference, what would you like the audience to come away with in the show, Kurt? What would you like the audience to learn about Buddy Holly that maybe they knew before, didn't know as deeply, or didn't know at all?
Well, in terms of thematically, I think what I guess my ultimate goal with people to come away with is just the inspiration to follow their own passions and to be as passionate about their endeavors as Buddy Holly was with his. Because that's one really shining trait of him, is that he didn't settle. I mean, everyone, there's compromise, but he was always passionate about making sure that what he put on tape was exactly what he wanted, or exactly what he heard in his head. And he didn't settle, no matter what, and as a result, he forged new trails and created new sounds that people hadn't heard before. And I think relative to, you know, not everyone's a musician, but everyone can relate to that idea of passion and a passion for excellence.
Have you been to Chicago before?
I have. I went there about a month or so ago for the first time for a couple days, and I love it, and I cannot wait to be back there for 2 weeks. It's going to be, I cannot wait.
Oh, we can't wait to have you.
Do you have any recommendations for good food?
Well, you know what? You have my cell phone. Give me a call. And okay. I will certainly give you a couple ideas, because we certainly have a few. But the weather is going to be beautiful, and the Cadillac Palace Cedar is going to be very exciting to have that big crowd out there for you.
I can't wait. I cannot wait to rock everybody.
Everybody be rock and rolling. Buddy, the Buddy Holly Story is a rock and roll journey through the life of the legendary singer-songwriter Buddy Holly, who shot to stardom in 1957, only to be tragically killed in a plane crash 2 years later on the day, legend says, the music died. Buddy, the Buddy Holly Story features a score of over 20 classic toe-tapping tunes from Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, and Richie Valens, including Peggy Sue, That'll Be the Day, La Bamba, and Chantilly Lace. From his first recording contract and move to New York to his fatal tour of Midwest America, Buddy, the Buddy Holly Story explains how, in just 3 short years, he changed the face of popular music forever. Broadway in Chicago is thrilled to announce the musical Buddy, the Buddy Holly Story, which will play Chicago at the Cadillac Palace Theater, 151 West Randall, for a limited engagement June 18th through the 30th. And on the line with us right now is the star of the Buddy Holly Story, Kurt Jenkins. Kurt, I'm going to give a phone number for people if they'd like tickets, 800-775-2000. Where are you at now?
I'm in St. Paul.
St. Paul, beautiful. And you're going to bring the show here to Chicago. And in a week or so, we're excited to see you. And we're excited to come out to the theater. And safe travels.
Thank you very much. I'm excited for everyone to come to the show. It's the most fun I've ever had on stage. And I no doubt people will feel that when they come to see the show.
We're looking forward to seeing it. Kurt, thanks for taking a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Kurt Jenkins, who portrays Buddy in the Buddy Holly Story at the Cadillac Palace Theater, June 18th through the 30th. Should be a lot of fun. For tickets, 800-775-2000. Very talented young man, and certainly doing great things as he travels the country with this great story and great musical. Peggy Sue, Oh Boy, That'll Be the Day, Well, All Right, Not Fade Away. Great music from a lot of great people. When he left us, it was truly the day the music died. Chicago's unique contribution to the elegance and passion of Spain's dance, music, and culture is showcased as never before in Ensemble Español's 37th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, Wednesday, June 12th through Sunday, June 23rd. For the 13th season, North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie will host the ever-popular Flamenco Passion Gala performances this year, highlighting the 20th anniversary of Dame Libby's international flamenco masterwork ballet, Bolero. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning dancer, having received the Artistic Ambassador Award from the Ruth Page Foundation and the Mayor's Appreciation Award for his exceptional contribution to the arts. A member of Who's Who in Dance, Hispanic Americans and Business Leaders in America, teacher, mentor, executive director, and proud member of Ensemble Español, now presenting Ensemble Español's 37th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, June 12th through the 23rd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. And on the line with us right now is Jorge Perez. Jorge, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hola, hola. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Always good to talk to you. And congratulations on another great success coming up.
Yes, yes. We're truly, truly excited to be, you know, celebrating 37 years of bringing Spanish dance in the three styles of Spanish dance, classical, folkloric, and flamenco throughout the United States and of course, even internationally. So we're really, really excited. Spain is here for 10 days.
It's an exciting and, as you said, very passionate dance, very passionate music. And it must be a lot of fun because you elicit a lot of excitement from the audience.
Oh, definitely. And because Spanish dance is such a passionate art form in all three styles, and of course everyone really associates Spain with the flamenco style, and the beauty of that, it is a reflection of the culture itself, of the people, which you hear in the songs. And I think because of the different elements that flamenco, you know, expresses, you know, there's stories of obviously festivities, there's also the sad songs, there's also the joy songs. songs, and I think everyone watching that emotion on the stage is able to relate to it. But that's not to say that also the classical ballets are very, very emotional with such great, you know, compositions that we've got with music like Jerónimo Jiménez, who's a great composer. And then, of course, we're celebrating this year's 20th anniversary of Maurice Ravel's Bolero, one of Dame Libby's masterworks in the Ensemble Español, which is pretty much everywhere we take it, from Poland to China to Puerto Rico, the reaction is just the same. And I think, again, it's that connection of passion that everyone can associate themselves with Spanish dance.
Jorge, we're going to go back to school a little bit here for our listeners so they understand this. Now, I'm going to ask you to define a few things here. We're going to define bolero, of course, which is a genre of slow-tempo Latin music. But what is habanera? What is rumba? What is tango? What is the flamenco? How does it all kind of come together, coalesce to make a great type of music?
Sure. I think the beauty of Spanish dance, it is one of the art forms that have, pretty much has a great repertoire as far as music. And I think a lot of it has to do because of its exploration. It's considered to have the most diverse dance and music culture in the world. And again, its history going back to the exploration that Spain did throughout the Americas and Latin America, bringing them back the influence into the southern part of Spain, flamenco. So you've got the flamenco tango, influenced, of course, by Argentina. You've got the flamenco garotín, influenced from when the Spaniards were in Puerto Rico. You've got the flamenco guajiras, influenced from when the Spaniards were in Cuba. And, of course, it even goes into the, you know, northern part of Spain, Galicia, where, you know, you've got dances like muñeras with Irish influence, and again, because of the exploration that was done there. I mean, the music, I kid you not, is, in, you know, bagpipe music, and even the costumes are in green of color, all, of course, because of the grand exploration that, you know, Spain has. And you'll see this in the music that they've incorporated. So, again, you've got the flamenco rumba, which, of course, is in the rhythms of four, again, grand influence from the Caribbean. It's just an amazing, amazing, you know, exploration of history and the vast, I guess, compositions that that España has throughout, you know, its influence in the world. And again, just connecting all these, you know, multifaceted cultures into the music.
But I never knew that. Now, I bet you a lot of people don't know that. There was an old saying that the sun never set on the British Empire, but in the same respect, the culture that Spain brought to all parts of the world was very similar.
Yes. And even, you know, the one that everyone associates pretty much Spain with is, of course, is the flamenco style. And that, you know, has, you know, its history roots all the way from when the travels of the Arabians or the Moors. You also have Africa on the southern part of España, which had a grand influence through the travels that the gypsies did. And, you know, there's also France. That's also one of the neighbors, and even Portugal. And so all these cultures kind of sort of influenced throughout their travels into, you know, its history. And so it's reflected in, you know, in its music. You got the Sephardic music as well. And of course, you know, its grand exploration that it, you know, it continued to do from, you know, all the way to the 14th century to even, you know, even nowadays, you know, combining it with American themes and music. I know we're just tonight we're premiering the film Sobre las Olas, a U.S. documentary about flamenco being brought to the United States thanks to the Italian Jose Greco. Mm-hmm. Jose Greco is the gentleman who actually gave Dame Libby her first scholarship where she toured with him.
Really?
Back in the 70s. And it's like, wow, you've got an Italian Spanish dancer bringing it to America. And get this, it gets further, talk about crossing the oceans or whatnot, and then you have this incredible Jewish American girl here from Evanston falling in love with this art form, thus creating the Ensemble Español, the premier center of Spanish dance and music in America. Talk about multifaceted cultural backgrounds and connections. You've got it right here with Ensemble Español.
Jorge, that's not a melting pot, that's a fondue.
Is that not a fondue or what?
That is the truth. You know, of course, we're familiar with Maurice Ravel's Bolero and, of course, Dame Libby's masterwork, Bolero. But other composers like Chopin and Debussy and Bizet and Saint-Saëns all wrote boleros themselves.
Yes. And I think you'll probably, when you read on the history of these great composers, how some of them were even, you know, great friends of one another, and or were influenced, you know, by their, you know, their previous you know, works of great composers. And I know we've been able to also, you know, have other masterworks. I mean, Bolero right now, it's celebrating its 20th anniversary. I think the music, everyone just, you know, falls in love with it because of just its repetitive theme. It's almost like hypnotic, where it starts off with one instrument and then it goes into several instruments. By the time Bolero finishes, you've got the full orchestra sound-wise. Well, Dame Libby was inspired so much by those themes of that music and the backdrops of Pablo Picasso paintings that the ballet, our flamenco ballet, begins with one female dancer, escalating, of course, to 2, to 5, to 10, to 15, to 17, to 18, all the way to the magic number of 20 dancers by the end of the ballet, just like the full orchestra itself. And again, it's one of our critically acclaimed popular masterworks, because we've got several in our repertoire. We also have a beautiful homage to Francisco de Goya, the great painter. But Bolero, for some reason, has become the company's trademark. And again, internationally, it has the same response. We just got back from St. Louis for the St. Louis Dance Festival. They're big fans of our work, and Bolero just broke a 13 record standing ovation last month. Yeah.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And then, you know, it also incorporates all the beautiful elements of Spanish dance. Libby has been able to, you know, add on. I mean, you'll see the elements of fans, not only in the costumes with the colors of red and black, but you also see it in the props used. So you'll have fans, you'll have shawls incorporated in there, and by the end we'll have the men with the toreador capes. And it's just beautiful. It really, really is. It's beautiful to perform because of the audience's reaction, but then also when you step out and look at it, it's just really mesmerizing.
But very frankly, Harry, nothing has brought more awareness to Ravel's Bolero than the movie 10, now, very seriously.
Yes, and you know what? Because of that, it was actually a turnoff for Dame Libby when she first started.
Really?
Yes, because it was so popularized by Hollywood, and not so much, I guess it's elegant, or the way it should have been, you know, presented the way it was meant to, way back in 1929 when it premiered in Paris. And, you know, I'm so glad for some time Dame Libby actually, you know, did not want to, you know, present this in our company repertoire. But, you know, thank goodness that I think the love and appreciation she had for it, and, of course, her creativity just overpowered that. And she changed her mind and said, you know what, I'm going to go on ahead and create this on the company. And, yeah, the creative process started many, many years ago, because, again, she fell in love with this music when, you know, she was a teenager herself, and actually performed it with Jose Greco himself in his company. So it was in her to bring it out. And I'm, you know, again, I'm honored to be a part of that creative process since 1993. Irma and I are the associate artistic director of the company, and who's also my dance partner. We're the only two original dancers of Bolero. And again, we've seen, you know, we performed it for all these years, and we've seen the creative process just, you know, grow in this piece and in the dancers. And again, it's truly exciting, and I just cannot wait to have our Chicago and Illinois audiences just, you know, take part in this historic anniversary of it.
Well, we're all looking forward to it, but you need to bring a little more passion to it, Ari, I think.
Can you tell I'm still passionate 20 years
ago? Oh, yes.
And it's just, you know, it's just an incredible, incredible work.
Under the artistic direction of founder Dame Libby Kameko and Associate Artistic Director Irma Ruiz, Ensemble Español is internationally recognized the premier center for Spanish dance, music, art, culture, and education in residence at the State University of America, Northeastern Illinois University. It's a 40 sensational dancers, singers, instrumentalists with international guest artists, promotes and preserves Spanish dance culture in all its forms, from classical, folkloric, flamenco, and contemporary dance and music traditions of Spain, from the Renaissance through 21st century. In 1982, Dame Libby became the first American artist in history to be decorated with Spain's highest honor, the Ribbon of the Dame, by His Majesty Don Juan Carlos I, King of Spain, for her artistic, cultural, and educational work throughout the United States. Ensemble Español has been a residence in Northeastern Illinois University since 1976. Chicago's unique contribution to the elegance and passion of Spain's dance, music, and culture is showcased as never before in Ensemble Español's 37th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, Wednesday, June 12th through Sunday, June 23rd. For the 13th season, North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie will host the ever-popular Flamenco Passion Gala performances, this year highlighting the 20th anniversary of Dame Libby's international flamenco masterwork ballet, Bolero. And on the line with us right now is our good friend Jorge Perez. Jorge, maybe a website or a phone number that people can get some information.
Oh, sure. We've got a couple websites, but I'll give you the North Shores because they do have our link to our complete festival schedule there to our website. But, yeah, you can just log on to northshorecenter.org. You'll see us. We're on the front page there, and then they've got our complete schedule and link to all the festivities and activities. Again, Spain is here, and it's been here for the last 37 years. The festival kicked off yesterday with a Duende Flamenco music concert at the Old Town School of Folk Music. Tonight, we're premiering a documentary film, Sobre las Olas, at the Instituto Cervantes at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow, the 14th through the 20th, we've got classes in all three styles of Spanish dance taking place at Northeastern Illinois University, our in-residence home. From morning till night, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., we've got two studios simultaneously with classes in all three styles, classical, folklore, and flamenco. And, of course, the festival closes with a very popular Flamenco Passion Gala concerts taking place on Friday and Saturday, June 21st and 22nd at 7:30 p.m. And then on Sunday, we have a matinee at 3 o'clock. And on Friday night, we are uniting with Dance for Life, an incredible, wonderful organization that raises money to bring awareness to HIV clinics, and they also work with many institutions educating folks on this disease. And we have a Q&A, a question and answer at 6 o'clock about Bolero with Dame Libby, myself, and Irma Suarez Ruiz, and dancers from the Bolero Ballet for about 30-40 minutes or so right there on the stage at the North Shore.
Got exciting few days here ahead of you, Jorge, and it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Very much enjoyed, and I appreciate you bringing all the passion. Give our best to Dame Libby.
Definitely. Thank you so much again for having us.
God bless you, Jorge.
Gracias.
Take care, my pal. Jorge Perez, one of the movers and shakers in Ensemble Español in the 37th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival. As Jorge said, June 12th through the 23rd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. For information, 773-442-4636 or 847-673-6300. A lot of activity here going on in the next week or so, and should be a lot of fun. A lot of passion in that music. But Ensemble Español. Chicago Loop Alliance announces a new 17,000-square-foot pop-up art loop gallery space in Block 37, 108 North State Street. The space will be curated by the Chicago Design Museum and open to the public on Thursday, June 6th, during CLA's scheduled First Thursday's Gallery Walk. Pop-up art loop is always free to the public. The gallery walks are self-guided tours of the many new exhibits throughout the loop and include complimentary wine, beer, and a smile booth, photo booth. For more information, please visit PopUpArtLoop.com. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning businessman, small business strategist, president of MEA Associates, an urban management consultant and economic analysis-oriented business group. Michael has been keenly involved in the regentrification and municipal business partnerships with the cities of Spokane, Pittsburgh, and Buffalo. Proud graduate of Canisius College and the University of Pittsburgh, and now the executive director of the Chicago Loop Alliance, presenting their new pop-up art loop gallery space in Block 37, Mr. Michael Edwards. Michael, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. This is interesting, these pop-up art spaces, a little different than it's not as stuffy as an art museum, gives people a little different feel or vibe as they go into the space.
Right. Yeah, we were actually... the Chicago Loop Alliance has been ahead of the curve in integrating art and technology and design to activate urban spaces, commercial spaces, into new uses that attract patrons.
I guess having an empty space, though, is kind of a reflection on the economic downturn that we're all experiencing. I guess some people would call it urban blight, but it's certainly an opportunity for people to exhibit what they do and do it very well.
You're absolutely right. When we began the program a few years ago, that was certainly the case. And I believe that before I was here, they had almost three dozen places, storefronts. Some of them you could walk into. Some of them were simply storefronts that were really display windows. And this year, sort of fortunately and unfortunately, we only have about 8 of those galleries left. All the rest have been filled up with viable commercial operations, which is terrific for the Loop.
Sure, sure. Do you have a lot of people who are interested and excited and anxious to get their art exhibited in some of these spaces, Mike?
We do. One of the things I've come to learn, because I'm relatively new to Chicago is a dynamic artistic community. And so we have a program manager, curator, Tristan Hummel, who does a fantastic job and is well-connected with the visual arts world and is able to bring in painters and sculptors and performers that really help to activate not only our spaces, but then showcase the talent that is Chicago.
You have to turn some people away?
You know, I don't know specifically, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. The Chicago Loop Alliance, of course, is a group of businessmen in and around the Loop, people participatory in the success and want to be successful here in the downtown Loop area. I'm from Chicago, lived here and went to school here and so forth. Welcome to Chicago. I know you're new here. I hope you're enjoying it.
I am, absolutely. It's a fantastic place. A lot of energy, a lot of smart people, a lot of ambitious people. With great ideas and the wherewithal to make them happen.
We don't have many restaurants, so that's the only problem.
I live in the Loop, and there's actually more than you might think.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm being facetious.
Of course, you had success in Spokane and Pittsburgh and Buffalo. What do you see, other than being so much bigger, that some of the challenges that you're facing here?
Well, there's just a lot of people doing a lot of great things. And so when you're in a community like Spokane or Pittsburgh, there's really only one downtown organization. And Chicago is so large, and there's so much going on that there's multiple groups. And so sort of aligning agendas and identifying places where you can really add value, it's not always as clear as it is in a smaller city. But there's definitely opportunities for us.
You know, a little while back, I think maybe a year ago, we had Color Jam. I'm sure you read about that or are familiar with that.
Yep.
And certainly there's the music and all the little planters in and around the Loop, which is a great idea because I think it makes a lot of sense, especially the tourists. Makes them feel comfortable, makes them feel at home. What are some of the plans that you have or ideas you have moving forward?
Well, we're going through a 5-year strategic planning process, and we're kind of in about 3/4 of the way through that. And one of the things that's changing is we spend a lot of money and a lot of effort on doing really great projects like Color Jam and Go Do Good and the Eye. Your listeners might remember the Eye years ago.
Right.
And those are extremely expensive. They're temporary for the most part. You know, they're up for 3 months, and they were great at bringing people into the Loop. We're not sure that that's sustainable. And what we've also noticed is that getting people to step off of Michigan Avenue or Wacker and come into the Loop sometimes can be a bit intimidating because of the location of the elevated track.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd like to really highlight those gateways to the Loop or encourage people to come into the Loop by doing a bit more placemaking. So instead of a big art project deeper in the Loop, I think your listeners are going to see, and there's actually an example of this at North State, we want to make better places that are attractive and invite people to come in and experience the Loop from other parts of the city.
What about places where, and I know the term park would be a little bit prohibitive because I don't think we have a lot of park space in the middle of the Loop, but somewhere where people can relax and just kind of kick back, have a Starbucks or whatever,
right,
like a park type setting.
Right. So right now, we just launched this last week. It's called The Gateway. And the city had an underutilized public space. It's essentially an island in the middle of State Street, at the north end of State Street, across from the Renaissance Hotel and the Witt Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put some tables and chairs in there, and you know, we maintain it, not just make the place, but we also maintain it. And we have some programming surprises, you know, set for a little bit later when the weather's, you know, a little bit more comfortable. But we're making a place there, and it's both a gateway to the Loop from Wacker, but it's also a place where you can sit and have a coffee and see your friends.
I can't speak for nationwide, you probably more so than I, but certainly in and around the suburbs of Chicago, and Chicago kind of sets the standard. A few years ago, we had the cows out, and everybody would paint a cow. You know, it was great. It was a great idea. It really was. So then they went to where you put chairs, you can paint chairs, and a lot of the suburbs in and around picked up on that, and came up with different ideas, which is great because it gives you a sense of belonging. It brings the community together, and what's a large, large place becomes more of a familiar kind of family-type atmosphere.
Yeah, very perceptive. Before we did the Gateway project and settled on that particular place, we actually inventoried all of potential public and private spaces where you could activate in some way, you know, with some kind of tables or chairs or rocking chairs or Adirondack chairs,
right,
some place for people to kind of linger in the loop, because it's such a fast-paced, business-oriented commercial center. People are rushing around all the time. It's really hard to find a place to just sit.
Right.
And so we identified almost 150 of those locations in the loop and talked about doing something like you were saying, you know, with maybe an artistic table or something in these different locations. But we decided to really focus our energies on one of these gateways to the loop, and that's why we're up at the gateway.
And you have a lot of support from the business community as it relates to that?
Yeah, so far we do.
That's terrific.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're looking for something that kind of is a direct investment back to benefit them. And so a place where you can, when the new Chick-fil-A opens next week, you know, if you can take your sandwich and go sit on the island, that's helpful to them. It expands the number of seats that can be utilized at their restaurant or Wow Bow or Potbelly or The Wit, State and Lake, whatever restaurants are around there.
Well, it's interesting because those same cows that we had for those exhibits are now on the billboard saying, eat more chicken. Have you seen those? Chicago Loop Alliance is a business organization that represents Chicago's most dynamic mixed-use district, the Loop, and advocates for the rapidly growing central business area. Chicago Loop Alliance is focused on promoting and uniting Loop businesses and organizations to support one another in creating a vibrant, flourishing Loop where people live, work, and play. And on the line with us right now is the executive director of the Chicago Loop Alliance, Michael Edwards. Michael, people want to get some information, want to get involved. How would they go about doing that?
Well, they can, of course, go to our website, ChicagoLoopAlliance.com, and there's ways to volunteer and to become involved. I believe that we have listing there of some of our upcoming pop-up art loop events. They're typically the first Thursday evening of every month, but in July, because of the 4th of July, I think it is the second Thursday. I think that might be the 11th, something like that. And so we encourage people to come down and take part in that. The Design Museum is open now. It's fantastic. It'll be there in third floor, block 37. It's free. There's some fantastic art in there. And that'll be there through the month of June. We're currently negotiating to see if we can extend that through July.
Sounds exciting. Pop-up Art Loop Gallery Space in Block 37, 108 North State. Go on to their website, popupartloop.com. And if there's anything we can do to get the word out or keep the word going, Michael, be happy to do that.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that very much, Kevin.
Thank you for taking a little time.
Yep. Have a great day.
You too. Michael Edwards, the executive director of the Chicago Loop Alliance, presenting their new pop-up art loop gallery space in Block 37. Very dynamic individual, very dynamic businessman. Great to have somebody come from outside the Chicagoland area with their passion and with their new ideas and so forth. Michael was in Spokane and Pittsburgh and Buffalo, and sounds like he's very invested in what's going on. He said he lives down in the Loop area, and certainly a lot of things happening, and this should be a lot of fun. So if you have the opportunity, pop up Art Loop Gallery Space in Block 37, 108 North State. And again, for information, popupartloop.com. Well, I don't know if we have time to finish the Dad Commandments, the 10 Fundamental Laws for Fathers, but we have some quotes here. We'll get back to the Dad Commandments next week, but some of the memorable Father's Day quotes. It doesn't matter who my father was. It matters who I remember he was. Anne Sexton, the author. To become a father is not hard. To be a father is, however. Any man can be a father. It takes someone special to be a dad. Harmon Killebrew said, my father used to play with my brother and me in the yard. Mother would come out and say, you're tearing up the grass. Dad would reply, we're not raising grass. We're raising boys. Great baseball player, Harmon Killebrew. Marlo Thomas's dad, Danny Thomas, said, my father said there were two kinds of people in the world, givers and takers. The takers may eat better, but the givers sleep better. Jim Valvano, the late Jim Valvano, great basketball coach, college basketball coach. My father gave me the greatest gift anyone could give another person. He believed in me. Famous author Henry David Thoreau, wrote Walden Pond, said, many men go fishing all of their lives without knowing that it is not fish they are after. Cary Grant's dad said, my father used to say, let them see you and not the suit. That should be secondary. Abraham Lincoln, my father taught me to work. He did not teach me to love it. Bill Cosby, fatherhood is pretending the present you love most is soap on a rope. Harry Truman, I have found the best way to give advice to your children is to find out what they want and then advise them to do it. The late Tim Russert, broadcaster, whatever we achieve and whoever we are, we stand on our Father's shoulders. Very true words. Finally, the actor Johnny Depp said, "That moment my daughter arrived was the first selfless moment that I had in my life." Very true words. Well, that about does it for our show today. Thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank Michael Edwards, the executive director of the Chicago Loop Alliance, presenting their new pop-up art loop gallery space in Block 37. For information, popupartloop.com. Kurt Jenkins, who stars in Buddy, the Buddy Holly story, the hit musical at the Cadillac Palace Theater, June 18th through the 30th. For information, 800-775-2000. Very exciting. Very passionate show. And finally, Jorge Perez, the artistic director of the Ensemble Español, presenting the 37th American Spanish Dance and Music Festival, June 12th through June 23rd at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, 9501 Skokie Boulevard. For information, 847-673-6300. Just a delight to chat with Jorge, and I thank Ann Fink for arranging that. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Happy Father's Day. Always changing. Why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. It's time you hear. Now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever.